Media Spotlight, the biblical commentary on the religious and secular media. Here's your host, Albert James Dager.
Making the rounds through the internet is a short video suggesting that Jesus named the Antichrist through his statement recorded in Luke 18:10. I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. The cryptic explanation rests upon the premise that, although recorded in Greek, Jesus would have been speaking Aramaic and or Hebrew. Therefore, we must look at the Hebrew words that would have been used in Jesus' statement. The narrator then takes us to two Hebrew texts to sort out what Jesus was saying. The first is Psalms 144:6. Cast forth lightning and scatter them. Shoot out your arrows and destroy them. The second is Isaiah 14:14, quoting Lucifer. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. The key words in these two Hebrew texts are lightning in Psalms 144:6 and the heights, or heaven, in Isaiah 14:14. The Hebrew word for lightning is keyed by Strong's Concordance number 1300, Barak. The Hebrew word for the heights is keyed by Strong's number 1116, Bama. We are then to use the Hebrew conjunction vowel, which may be transliterated as U or O, and which the narrator says is commonly used to connect two concepts. Putting them together, we are told that Jesus said, I beheld Satan as Barack Obama, or I beheld Satan as Barack Obama. The narrator concludes, did Jesus reveal to us the name of the Antichrist? I report, you decide. The responses to this video have ranged from shock to disbelief to scoffing. Might many Christians take this as a Bible code affirmation that secretly confirms Barack Obama as the Antichrist? Certainly the narrator seems to think so, though he doesn't give a definitive answer, leaving it up to the viewer to decide. So let's take a look at what is suggested. First, the narrator is correct that Jesus did not speak Greek, but in all likelihood, he spoke Aramaic and possibly Hebrew. But Aramaic was not an ancient form of Hebrew as much as it was a hybrid language that incorporated Hebrew with Phoenician, a Canaanite language of that era. Its origins go back 3,000 years, and it was the common language of Israel during the Second Temple period, from 539 BC to AD 70. According to experts, Aramaic is the Semitic subfamily to the Afro-Asiatic language family. The producers of the video corrected this in an updated version. If, as assumed by historians, Jesus spoke Aramaic, then it was not pure Hebrew. But that's just a minor aside to this whole issue. The fact remains that in Hebrew, the words transliterated from Greek in Luke 10:18 could be as stated in this video. However, it would be helpful to look at the King James Bible's syntax for the statement and compare it to modern American English syntax, where the King James Version says, I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. Applying modern syntax, we would say, I saw Satan falling from heaven like lightning. So Jesus wasn't saying, I saw Satan as lightning, or I saw Satan as Barak. Rather, he was saying, I saw Satan fall, just as lightning falls from the heavens. The word for the heavens as the atmosphere, the heavens as interstellar space, and heaven as the abode of God are the same in Greek, ouranos. It is variously translated in the King James Version as air, heaven, heavenly, and sky. Lightning falls from the atmosphere, but Satan fell from heaven, God's abode. Yet he is now in the heavens as the prince of the power of the air, Ephesians 2:2. Jesus was telling his disciples that he saw Satan falling from heaven just as lightning falls from the heavens. How does lightning fall from the heavens? It is so quickly that it appears as a solid lightning bolt rather than as a shaft of light unfolding from the sky in steps and traveling to the earth. Light is pure energy, the fastest traveling element known to man, moving at 186,000 miles per second. The analogy suggests that Satan's sin caused him to fall rapidly from heaven. Admittedly, the Hebrew does allow for coincidence in using the words Barak and Bama, particularly if we follow the instructions to insert the conjunction vowel, or O, between the two. But is such coincidence sufficient to draw the conclusion that Barack Obama is the prophesied Antichrist for the last days? Hardly. There is also the question, from where will Antichrist arise? There is nothing in Scripture to definitively state that he will come from anywhere other than the Middle East, specifically from the nations that surround Israel. I am aware that some prophecy teachers tell us that he will come from Russia or Syria or will be a false Jewish Messiah, but there is nothing clearly stated in Scripture to support any of these claims. However, there are good reasons to believe he will be a Muslim. But first, we must set the stage, and we will begin with Daniel's prophecy. Daniel's prophecy regarding 70 weeks or 7-year periods, which refer to the 490 years of God's dealing with Israel, detail the rise and fall of world rulers during that time. The 490 years are described in segments as 7 weeks or 49 years, followed by 62 weeks or 434 years, which will culminate in Messiah being killed, according to Daniel 9:26. After that, the people of the prince that will come, the Roman Emperor Vespasian, followed by his general Titus, shall destroy the city and the sanctuary. And in the middle of the 70th week, he will cause the sacrifice and the oblation to cease. Daniel 9:27. Having addressed the time of the end, this vision concerning Israel leaps ahead in time, ignoring for the most part the times of the Gentiles. Daniel then describes a person who fits the description of a coming Antichrist. Quote, "Neither will he regard the god, Elohim, or gods, of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any gods, for he shall magnify himself above all. But in his estate he will honor the god of forces, and a god whom his fathers did not know he will honor with gold and silver and with precious stones and pleasant things. Thus he will do in the most strong fortifications with a strange god whom he will acknowledge and increase with glory, and he will rule over many and will divide the land for gain." These passages describe the 16th century Muslim caliph Osman ibn Affan and the rise of the Ottoman Empire, which has left its mark on most of the old Roman Empire. Like his so-called prophet Muhammad, Ibn Affan did not honor the gods of his fathers, but worshipped Allah, a god of forces. And at the time of the end, the king of the south, Egypt, will push at him, and the king of the north, Syria, will come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships, and he will enter into the countries and will overflow and pass over. He will also enter into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown, but these shall escape out of his hand, Edom and Moab and the chief of the children of Ammon, present-day Jordan. He will stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. But he will have power over the treasures of gold and of silver and over all the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps. But news out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore he will go forth with great fury to destroy and utterly to ban many things. And he will plant the tabernacle of his palace between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, Zion. Yet he shall come to his end, and no one shall help him. The Muslim Ottoman Empire at one time extended as far as France and had a strong foothold in Spain. Today the Ottoman Empire has ceased to exist officially, but its Islamic influences remain. Jerusalem was taken by the Ottomans and remained in Muslim possession until the Six-Day War of 1967, when modern Israel took control of the city. Today, one of Islam's most holy sites, the tabernacle called the Dome of the Rock, sits upon the ancient Temple Mount, which is Mount Zion, located between the Mediterranean Sea and the Dead Sea. While researching this, I felt there had to be an answer to the issue of Edom, Moab, and Ammon escaping out of this prince's hand. Every map shows the Ottoman Empire controlling the entire Middle East. After prayer for understanding and whether or not I was correct in my assessment, I just happened upon the website for the nation of Jordan and found this in its history. Quote, "The 4 centuries of Ottoman rule, 1516 to 1918, were a period of general stagnation in Jordan. The Ottomans were primarily interested in Jordan in terms of its importance to the pilgrimage route to Mecca al-Mukarrama. They built a series of square fortresses to protect the pilgrims from the desert tribes and to provide them with sources of food and water. However, the Ottoman administration was weak and could not effectively control the Bedouin tribes. Over the course of Ottoman rule, many towns and villages were abandoned, agriculture declined, and families and tribes moved frequently from one village to another. The Bedouins, however, remained masters of the desert, continuing to live much as they had for hundreds of years. End quote. The influence of the Ottoman Empire in Edom, Moab, and Ammon was minor, and the people were never really conquered. I see good reason to believe that the last day's Antichrist will be a Muslim, possibly Turkish, for several reasons. One, Muslims worship Allah, a god their ancestors did not know. Allah was the god of war, a god of forces or fortifications of the pagan Arabs in Mecca. He was adopted by Muhammad as the only god. Not desiring the desire of women, Muslims regard women as chattel. Two, Islam is the greatest enemy of Jews and Christians today. Three, Turkey is the land of Gog and Magog, which will attack Jerusalem at the end of the millennium. Four, in Revelation 2:13, Pergamum in Turkey is called the seat of Satan. Five, Turkey was the capital of the Ottoman Empire, and today unites the Islamic lands of the East with the Christian lands of Europe. It is considered both European and Asian. Its capital, Istanbul, is the only city in the world that rests on two continents, Europe and Asia. And finally, six, Turkey is a moderate Islamic nation that finds favor with the West and, at this writing, is a strong candidate for inclusion in the European Union. I realize this flies in the face of most theories that suggest the Antichrist will be a Jew because he would have to be accepted by the Jews as their Messiah. But there is nothing in Scripture to suggest that he will be regarded as Israel's Messiah. In view of the Vatican's interfaith ecumenism, what better coalition for an Antichrist union could there be than Islam in the East and Roman Catholicism in the West? The late Pope John Paul II stated that Islam's Allah is the same God worshipped by Christians. In fact, this is one of the accepted maxims of the interfaith ecumenical movement. Many nominal Christians believe this lie and are seeking unity with Islam. Ecumenical religious services are taking place that join Muslims, Jews, Christians, pagans, and even devil worshippers in common prayer. On the political side, these same religious leaders are taking an ecumenical stance on behalf of so-called climate change and environmental issues. The Antichrist's kingdom will be religious. Islam controls a large portion of the old Roman Empire, and Roman Catholicism is still the preeminent religion in Western Europe, which is seeing a strong immigration of Muslims. With the Church of England making noises that it seeks reunification with Rome, as does Lutheranism and the Eastern Orthodox religions, there is little standing in the way of a revived Roman-Ottoman religio-political union. Prince Charles, who may one day as king be the head of the Church of England, has stated that he does not want to be known as the defender of the faith, but as the defender of faith, all faith, including Islam. He has many ties to Islam even now. Islam is the fastest growing religion in the world. Since the September 11 attacks on the World Trade Center, who has been made the victim by the government and the media? Islam. We are constantly fed the lie that Islam is a religion of peace and that we can coexist with it. Well-known pastors, such as Bill Hybels and Rick Warren, have sought dialogue with Muslim leaders. Hybels had a Muslim imam, holy man, in his pulpit extolling Islam's beliefs to the applause of his audience. By such actions, these men have denied the gospel of grace through faith in Jesus Christ as the only way to God. With all the propaganda in favor of Islam since the attacks, more people are looking into Islam and are converting to it from Christianity. As well, favor toward Islam among Americans since the September 11th attack had risen from 45% to 59% as quickly as 3 months later. In spite of calls for coexistence, the gospel is forbidden to be proclaimed in Islamic nations. Overall, Christians and Jews have suffered more under Islam and Roman Catholicism than under any other ideology, even communism and Nazism. Daniel's prophecy continues. And at that time, the very last days, Michael shall stand up, the great prince who stands for the children of your people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. And at that time your people shall be delivered, every one who shall be found written in the book. These are Israelite believers in Jesus Christ. The nation, of course, is Israel. This coincides with Revelation 12:7-17. And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon. And the dragon fought and his angels and did not prevail. Neither was their place any longer found in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world. He was cast into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, Salvation and strength and the kingdom of our God and the power of his Christ have now come. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, who accused them before our God day and night. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of their testimony. And they did not love their lives unto the death. Therefore rejoice, you heavens, and you who dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil has come down to you, having great wrath, because he knows that he has but a short time. And when the dragon saw that he was cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman who brought forth the man-child. And two wings of a great eagle were given to the woman, so that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for a time, and times, and half a time, from the face of the serpent. And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, so that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. And the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood that the dragon had cast out of his mouth. And the dragon was angry with the woman, and he went to make war with the remnant of her seed, who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. If the Antichrist will be a Muslim from Turkey, or possibly Syria or Babylon, which is in Iraq, then can he be the president of the United States? Yet following is an interesting scenario that could plausibly develop. We must not be dogmatic about this, and we should hold final judgment until history unfolds to reveal that which is sealed up until the time of the end. As much as a large segment of the United States populace loudly acclaimed the ascension of Barack Obama to the office of president, a man whose only employment experience until being elected senator of Illinois was as a community activist, his popularity has slipped dramatically in the short time he has been in office. Yet as his popularity in the United States continues to slide, his popularity among all other nations continues to rise. What can explain his being nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize only 2 weeks after he took office and his being elected to receive the prize after only 9 months? The United Nations is looking to Obama to be the world leader in implementing reforms to address the so-called crisis of climate change. This phrase is taking the place of global warming, since it has been shown that the Earth has been going through a cooling phase for the past decade or more in spite of the increase in so-called greenhouse gases. Now the crisis is climate change, so that no matter which way things go, the globalists can be right. According to an October 26th Seattle Times report, quote, global warming will never be reined in unless the United States leads the way, United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said Sunday at the start of a 2-day visit to Seattle. Ban praised the city for setting an example with policies to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and said such local initiatives help build momentum for national policies. All the world is now looking to the leadership of the United States and President Obama, Ban said in an interview. End quote. Ban's appeal to Obama to lead the world in fighting climate change complements a March 1 article in The Inspired Economist, headlined, Saint Obama, the Green Messiah of Climate Change. The article begins under a photo of a painting titled Saint Obama. San Francisco-based artist Feroza Unvala depicts Obama with a crown of thorns hovering over his head. Emblazoned on his chest in large letters are the words, Great Expectations. Says the article by Renita Malhotra, quote, environmentalists, politicians, and eco-minded individuals everywhere have begun to view President Obama as a new green messiah. In just a few weeks, the president has elevated the fight against global warming to higher levels of seriousness, and now the rest of the world is joining his cause. End quote. In its own words, The Inspired Economist, a left-leaning magazine devoted to environmental change, highlights the individuals and companies applying passion and innovation to economic, social, and environmental challenges. So-called climate change will be the major factor to bring about total globalization. In his speech to the United Nations on September 23, 2009, Barack Obama stated that world peace depends upon environmental action, quote, for the preservation of our planet, unquote. Just about every aspect of our lives is connected to environmentalism. Jobs, food, clothing, shelter, transportation, recreation, entertainment. Anything that consumes energy can be linked to this so-called crisis and come under globalist control. Every nation will surrender its sovereignty for the sake of climate change. It isn't necessary for the world's nations to be melded into a single nation. All it takes is cooperation on environmentalism to bring about global, centralized control over every aspect of life. There are many examples of the world's deification of Obama. On his 100th day in office, April 29, 2009, there was to be unveiled in New York's Union Square Park a painting by Michael D'Antonio entitled The Truth, depicting Obama with a crown of thorns, arms outstretched in a crucifixion pose. Behind him is the seal of the President of the United States. Due to a great outpouring of dissent, primarily by what the artist calls the irate Christian right, who misrepresented the art as blasphemy, he pulled the exhibit. He now regrets having done so, wishing he had stood firm for his Second Amendment rights. But this is blasphemy. Jesus said that he is the truth, John 14:6, and that no one can come to the Father except through him. We have shown in past issues of Media Spotlight other pieces of art that appeared during the presidential campaign depicting Obama as the savior of mankind. I have thought for some time that Obama might be a candidate for the globalists' choice as leader of the world. Should he fail to win a second term, which the current political climate in the United States offers as a distinct possibility, might the world cleave to him as their choice for Grand Poobah? According to the birthers, who insist that Obama is not a native-born U.S. citizen, there is also the outside possibility that he may be found out as pretender to the throne, holding the office of President of the United States as a foreign-born alien. The recent online posting of a Kenyan birth certificate for Barack Hussein Obama, listing his religion as Muslim, might seem to prove the birthers correct in their assessment of his not being constitutionally qualified to be president. This particular document has been labeled bogus by Snopes, Truth or Fiction, and Fact Check, and came on the heels of a truly fake Kenya birth certificate for Obama. Following are the reasons Snopes regards this particular certificate as bogus. 1. A different birth certificate had proven a forgery. 2. The city of Mombasa, then technically a part of Zanzibar, not Kenya proper, was very far away from the part of Kenya in which Barack Obama's senior's family lived. In September 2009, U.S. District Court Judge Clay Land dismissed attorney Orly Tates' complaint, charging that Obama is not a natural-born U.S. citizen, and threatened to sanction Tates if she filed any similarly, quote, frivolous motions in the future. Tates had offered the birth certificate as evidence, but it was dismissed out of hand. Snopes says that Mombasa was technically a part of Zanzibar, which borders Kenya to the south. The history of Mombasa is checkered. During the time of British control, Zanzibar included the islands of Zanzibar, Pemba, Latham, and surrounding islets, and theoretically it included the coastal strip of Kenya, where the city of Mombasa lay. A 1960 National Geographic map shows Mombasa situated on the coast of Kenya. The Sultan of Zanzibar controlled Mombasa for a short time, but Mombasa and the coastal strip of Kenya was handed to the newly independent government of Kenya as late as 1963. Snopes, which has evidenced a left-leaning bias, is not necessarily always trustworthy when it comes to politics. It states in so many words that the Hawaiian certificate of birth proves that Obama was born in the U.S. Further, Snopes reproduces a segment from the August 13, 1961 edition of Honolulu's Sunday Advertiser, announcing a son born on August 4, 1961 to Mr. and Mrs. Barack H. Obama of 6085 Kalinaloli Highway. The same announcement was also in Honolulu's Star Bulletin. Someone may suggest that the unnamed son was taken to Kenya, died, and was replaced with an adopted son who was named Barack Hussein Obama Jr., but we won't go there. The official Obama website displays a certification of birth from Hawaii. It is not an actual birth certificate because it does not have the doctor's name and signature or other pertinent information that birth certificates normally contain. Yet Obama's website falsely calls it Barack Obama's official birth certificate. Hawaiian government officials have stated they've seen the original birth certificate. Still, as long as Obama refuses to produce his truly official birth certificate, as well as other documents related to his education at Occidental College, Columbia University, and Harvard, which some claim would show he attended as a foreign exchange student, the controversy will continue to rage. One thing that could prove the Kenya birth certificate either bogus or genuine would be an imprint of Obama's right foot, which could be compared to the footprint on the birth certificate. That would be virtually impossible for someone to forge. It's not likely that Obama will conclusively be proven a non-native-born citizen. Even if it were true, the powerful influences of world politics would not allow it to be revealed, certainly not through the mainstream media. But if it were proven that he is not constitutionally qualified to be president of the United States, it could free him up sooner and allow the world to embrace him as its global leader. Here's something else to ponder. Barack Obama was born into a Muslim family, but evidently decided at some point in his life to change his religion to Christian. Yet he has strong affections for Islam. Some even believe he may be a closet Muslim who will use his office to benefit Islam's influence in the world, and particularly in the United States. Obama's gushing praise for Islam during his Middle East visit was way over the top and exaggerated Islam's accomplishments. He spoke with nostalgia about hearing the Muslim call to prayer in his youth. He even went so far as to say that Islam was a boon to Western Europe's progress in the past. Praising what he called Islam's great achievements in architecture, art, literature, poetry, and spirituality, of all things, he even credited Islam with developing the Arabic numerals we use today. This lie that Islam gave us Arabic numerals is even dispensed in some textbooks in the United States. The truth is that what are commonly called Arabic numerals were not invented by the Arabs, but by Indian mathematicians. They are properly known as Hindu or Indian numerals, also Hindu Arabic numerals. Even the Arabs call them Hindu numerals. The Indian numerals were adopted by Persian mathematicians in India and passed on to the Arabs, who transmitted them to Europe from North Africa in the 10th century. They were spread around the world through European trade and colonialism and are now the most common numerical system in the world, thanks to European industriousness. As far as Islam's art, architecture, and poetry are concerned, there are no original Islamic contributions in these areas. It was by conquest that Islam enslaved and or employed people of other cultures to build Islam's culture. Islam's present architecture is a bastardized Byzantine model that bespeaks a primitive attraction to gaudy gewgaws. I've digressed to demonstrate how the truth about Islam's history of bloodshed and barbarism is downplayed by world leaders, and now Barack Obama. And revisionist tactics are used in order to give Islam credibility as a beneficent and desirable cultural blessing. Islam, and we must admit Roman Catholicism, has exhibited the most inhumane and violent tendencies in the quest for world dominance. Might a Muslim Antichrist not be the perfect candidate to unite the Muslim East with the Christian ecumenical West for shared world dominance? Although Obama had little to do with the National Day of Prayer, applying a largely secular tone to his proclamation, he purposely held a Muslim Day of Prayer on the South Lawn of the White House. And although he chose not to appear in public or to meet with Christian or Jewish leaders, as had been the custom of his predecessor, Obama did publicly appear with Islamic leaders at their day of prayer. Obama is not a true believer in Jesus. He may call himself a Christian, and that's why we must address his words and actions, but he behaves more like a Christian Muslim. Obama may not be the Antichrist, but he certainly is an Antichrist. Although we may not put any real stock in the Barack Obama suggestion of the aforementioned internet video, we do not dismiss the possibility that Barack Hussein Obama could find himself as the unifying force between East and West, particularly the Middle East and Europe. The climate is right for the Antichrist to arrive on the scene, or for someone to pave the way for his arrival. At the least, Obama's sudden rise to worldwide popularity based on nothing tangible in the way of political accomplishment demonstrates the willingness of people around the world to be duped into following in a cult-like manner a charismatic leader of obscure beginnings.
You have been listening to Media Spotlight, a biblical commentary on the religious and secular media. Media Spotlight is dedicated to the task of informing Christians of present trends in the mass communications media that are seducing the minds of men and keeping them from a full relationship with God. If you'd like to receive our regular publications and special reports, write to Media Spotlight, Post Office Box 290, Redmond, Washington, 98073. Thank you for listening. Until next time, let this mind be in you, which is also in Christ Jesus.